Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 14 to finish at 24,448. S&P 500 Index up just a fraction of a point at 2,670. NASDAQ Composite down 17 at 7,128. Russell 2000 Small and Mid-Caps down 2 at 1,562. Yield on the 10-year Treasury up 2 basis points at 2.98%. Oil up 53 cents at $68.93 per barrel. Gold down $11 at $13.25.20 an ounce. Bond prices fell. 10-year note yield hitting its highest level in over 4 years, topping 2.98%. The reason for the sell-off? Well, take your pick. The growing supply of government debt, accelerating inflation, higher oil and commodity prices, trade policy concerns. Also, the Fed is raising its short-term lending rate as the U.S. economy strengthens after holding it near zero in the wake of the financial crisis. The 3 rate hikes last year pushed up 2 and 5-year Treasury yields in particular, but they've also affected 10-year yields as central bankers expect more boost this year. Higher yields make the burden of everything from mortgages to student loans and car payments even heavier, and that slows the economy. Or, in the Fed's view, it's a way to prevent the economy from overheating. The market is finally coming around to the idea that the Federal Reserve this year will be raising interest rates a total of maybe 4 times. The Fed Funds futures market as of this morning gave almost a 50% probability that the Fed will have 3 more rate hikes this year for a total of 4. The CME's FedWatch tool, which has been a pretty reliable gauge of the Federal Open Market Committee's actions, assigned a 48.2% chance. Now, if you're not familiar with the bond market, let's review the basics. A bond's yield is a measure of the return an investor can expect from buying it. It's determined by the bond's interest rate and the price paid for it. For instance, buying a security that pays a fixed 2%, the coupon, at face value, known as par, results in a yield of 2%. Buying it at a cheaper price would raise the yield for the investor, while paying a premium would reduce the overall yield. Maybe the most confusing aspect of the bond market to outsiders is the inverse relationship between price and yield. The easy formula is price up, yield down, or price down, yield up. If you're wondering what might come next, 3.05% is the highest intraday level since 2011, set back January 2, 2014. Once past that mark, there's no obvious support. If you're looking to 7 years ago for guidance, that year, the 10-year yield fell from as high as 3.766% to as low as 1.67%. as the U.S. credit downgrade rocked markets. Since 2011, that 3% level has been touched only twice, briefly, 2013 and then in early 2014, before a bond bull market drove yields to record lows. But 3% has also been cited as critical to determining whether the 3-decade bull market in bonds is at an end. In the mind of analysts who look at market patterns, once the yield breaks much beyond the 3.05% to levels last reached in 2011, that threshold could flip to a floor from a ceiling. The 10-year Treasury yield is a global benchmark for borrowing costs. Corporations will have to pay more to issue debt, which they've done cheaply in recent years. So will state and local governments, which could jeopardize investments in public infrastructure. Homeowners will face higher mortgage rates or lose out on refinancing at a lower cost. Taking out loans for cars or college could also become more expensive. If you invest in bond funds, things could get really painful. The value of a fixed income fund's shares are determined by the price of the bonds it holds, and as yields rise, those prices will fall. The impact on stocks is a bit more tricky. In theory, higher corporate borrowing cost would erode a key element of companies' profitability, but they're also getting a windfall from the Republican tax plan. The area to watch is high dividend stocks, which has served as a bond proxy for years since they offer high fixed payments. Now, back in February, yields moved close to 3%, and that ignited a sell-off in stocks. Stocks wobbled again in March, but have mostly stabilized. While China said Sunday it would welcome direct trade talks with the United States, a day after U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said he would consider a trip to China, the world's two biggest economies have threatened each other with tariffs. Meanwhile, Mexico and the European Union agreed on a new trade deal over the weekend. The deal removes virtually all tariffs on goods and marks a move by Mexico to reduce its reliance on trade with the U.S. It also opens the door for companies in the European Union or Mexico to bid for government contracts in the other. Meanwhile, the United States gave American customers of Russia's biggest aluminum producer more time to comply with sanctions and said it would consider lifting them if Russian tycoon Oleg Deripaska, the majority shareholder of Rusal, ceded control of the company. The National Association of Realtors reports sales of previously owned homes rose 1.1% in March, but were 1.2% lower than a year ago. Existing home sales were at a 5.6 million seasonally adjusted annual pace in March. Such a brisk selling pace is surprising given how lean inventory is. Homes stayed on the market an average of 30 days in March, and at the current pace of sales, it would take just 3.6 months to exhaust available inventory. That's down sharply from the long-time average of about 6 months. The median price for homes sold in March was $250,400. That's up 5.8% compared to a year ago. First-time buyers made up 30% of all transactions in March. That's up a tick from 29% in February, but well below the 40% share they've historically enjoyed. According to a new survey from the National Association of Business Economists, some 90% of American companies have job openings, but shortages of skilled labor are the worst in a decade. Only a little over one-third of those companies say they've increased pay. Another third say they have trained current employees so they could be promoted into new jobs, and a quarter of the firms have invested in labor-saving processes such as automation. One thing most companies say has not affected hiring plans, the Trump tax cuts. Only 11% said they would hire more people because of lower corporate tax rates. The flash IHS Markit U.S. manufacturing PMI climbed to 56.5 this month, up from 55.5, touched a 3.5-year high. Readings over 50 indicate expansion. A similar survey of service-oriented businesses that employ most Americans also rose, edged up to 54.4 from 54. Oil futures gave up earlier losses to turn higher ahead of the settlement on the New York Merck. S&P 500 companies expected to report their strongest first-quarter profit gains in 7 years. Of the 87 companies that have reported so far, 79.3% have top profit expectations, that according to data from Thomson Reuters. After the closing bell today, Google's parent company, Alphabet, reported first-quarter financial results, posting earnings of $13.33 per share on $31.15 billion of revenue. Those numbers beat expectations of $9.30 per share on $24.7 billion in revenue. The company's revenue reflects a 26% jump over last year's level, or 23% on a constant currency basis. Google's ads business posted $26.6 billion in revenue for the first quarter, still pumping out big profits. Traffic acquisition costs were up to $6.3 billion in the first quarter of 2018, compared to $4.6 billion in the first quarter of 2017. Because of a new accounting rule, Alphabet had to report the unrealized gains and losses from its investments in companies like Uber and reported a $3 billion gain on equity securities. Operating losses from Google's other bets, that includes business segments such as its health tech-focused Verily and Google Fiber, those losses decreased from $703 million in the first quarter of 2017 to $571 million in the first quarter this year. Google's other revenues, which include its cloud division hardware sales such as smartphones and the Nest line of home automation technologies, rose from $3.2 billion last year in the same quarter to $4.4 billion in this quarter. Hasbro reported a revenue of $716 million. That's down from $849 million last year, $100 million short of estimates. Hasbro reported a loss of $112 million, or 90 cents per share. In addition to anticipated problems stemming from the Toys R Us liquidation, Hasbro said inventory overhang in Europe drove down revenue in the company's first quarter results, but shares were up 4% today. Germany's Fresenius is ditching its plan to buy generic drug maker Acorn following allegations of breaches of FDA data integrity rules. Acorn down 33% today. Henry Schein shares climbing in early trade, at least. The healthcare products maker is going to spin off and merge its animal health business with startup Vets First Choice, an online platform for veterinarians. Henry Schein up 6.8%. And Walmart reported close to finalizing a deal to buy a majority stake in Flipkart Online, that's India's leading e-commerce company, for at least $12 billion. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 14 to finish at 24,448. S&P 500 up just a fraction of a point at 2670. NASDAQ down 17 at 7128. As always, follow along at moneyradio.com for live streaming and archived audio, and the daily blog, eatthebankers.com.